Hi, I'm Rachel Sosin, and this is 6 Degrees of Innovation, a podcast that grew out of my natural curiosity and love of innovative solutions to big and little challenges. Each episode, I'll speak with someone who is making an impact in an innovative way. Listen in as we talk about what got them started, what problem they're tackling, and how it's going. This week, I'm talking to Denise McQuaid. Denise is a leader in building and growing businesses with a focus on strategy, aligning culture with business models, especially in complex and challenging environments. She's often called upon to speak about female founders, innovation, and tech. You may have seen a GIF that often makes the rounds on International Women's Day with women simultaneously climbing a ladder and offering a hand to the woman below. That is exactly what I think of when I think of Denise. In the short time I've known her, I've been honored by her willingness to lend support and share her advice with me. I'm really grateful to have the chance to interview her and so excited to share that conversation with you today. If you listen closely, you might even hear me clap with excitement a couple of times during the conversation. Hi, Denise. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I'm delighted to be with you, Rachel. Thank you for inviting me.
You just always impress me with your knowledge and your experience, and I'm really glad that I met you last year. So thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
I am really excited to have you here so that we can talk about women in innovation, and particularly in investment in women in innovation. And I think I really love that your experience and your background sort of covers the gamut from being more investment focused to also being more innovation focused and understanding both from the founder side as well as from the funder side. And so I feel like I have already learned a lot from you, and I'm looking forward to learning more today. And I think I'd like to start our conversation with something that I learned recently from it was a literature review of over 1,000 journal articles. I don't remember where I was reading it. I'll put the link in the in the show notes. But what they were saying was that when there are more women in the technological innovation process, that leads to greater productivity and better results. And I think that is really exciting when we have some really big challenges ahead of us. And I also know that there's still a shortage of women in technology. So I am curious to know what do you think we can do to bring more women into the space for the better potential results?
Yes. It's a really interesting question, because obviously there's been quite a shift over time in terms of the growth of women in technology roles and founding businesses, which has obviously led to some of the biggest, advancements. And I think there's a couple of reasons why we need to be taking stock and being quite positive about the position that we're in. There's still a lot more to do, but I think we need to be quite positive. You know, for the longest time, it was a male-dominated industry. For the longest time, founding a business was something that a man did as opposed to a female. And I think the shift in the changes, the research indicates, Rachel, that most women strive to find their business or to work in an environment that is very close to their heart. So they are setting up and establishing their businesses because of a catalyst or a moment in time that affected them personally. And they're trying to build a solution or be part of building a solution within an organization that is actually going to make a difference. And that research is widely publicized in terms of that agenda. we are seeing much more focused determination in terms of solving some of the world's biggest challenges, which are being led out by female CTOs and female engineers and female founders. So I think we have to take stock and be quite positive about that. I think one of the elements that we have seen is obviously some of the changes in education that has happened that I think is increasing the pipeline of amazing talent coming through that want to work in technology and want to start their own businesses. So I think that's a really, really big positive. There's still, again, lots still to do to get the balance where it needs to be. But I think we need to take the wins as we work through over the last decade. There's definitely changes in the world. But I also think one of the things that we see and we are certainly seeing across the investment world is that these changes, you can't start a business without understanding the customer. And we have to be honest, half of the population is women. So there was lots of products and services that were being built with only men in mind. And I think that change, both from those contributing to building them, to those building them as founders, to those actually buying those products, there's been an acknowledgement that we have to take care of 50% of the population in lots of ways. So I think for me, there's so many positives in that, that I think we're in for an exciting next decade in relation to innovation, technology, and investment.
I think that, I think that the progress that we have made is really exciting. And I think about just the number of women who I grew up with who are now doing really fascinating work in innovation or in tech or in investment that I don't know if any of us really knew was even an option when we were kids. And they have now, you know, ended up there for, you know, through a variety of routes. And I think it's really interesting. And that's just looking at my own personal network. So seeing how it is changing and increasing around the sort of broader business world, I think is really, really wonderful. What you were saying about women are moved to start businesses based on personal need, I think is interesting. Do you think that shifts the types of businesses that they are starting or their approach to business growth as opposed to if someone who is building a business based more from a objective business success plan?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question. I most recently had the privilege to interview Beck Evans, who is the author of How to Have a Happy Hustle. And within the book, and when we say happy hustle, we're not talking about the 1970s dance or the shady perception of hustle that was in the 1980s. Beck speaks so eloquently in her book about how to really build out and drive the prototyping stage and the market validation of your product before you take it to market. But she talks, and I'm sorry if I can't curse on this, but she talks about the Fuck's Sake Club. And the Fuck's Sake Club is basically where you're founding a business on a real challenge that has been presented to you. And it's that catalyst moment that you go, for fuck's sake. And actually that drives you forward. And there has been quite a significant amount of research done in that more women are solving problems that affect big challenges, big hairy challenges in the world. And they are very conscious of the agenda, whether it has affected them personally, has affected their children, has affected their community, has affected the wider agenda around the sustainability goals, and they're just a little bit more conscious. And the research is indicating that we need more of these women to be fighting for this change. So it's not only about them founding their business or contributing to building that business as part of the team, but also that to support them to really address some of the issues that are coming through that we see all the time. And whether that's from a climate perspective or a femtech dealing with some of the big hairy issues around women's health, those are areas where women are being impacted themselves. So starting the business to solve that challenge for everybody else. I think one of the things, Rachel, though, within that, that we have to flag is the funding side of things in terms of, you know, companies being able to move forward in terms of scaling those businesses. So they fund them to make a change in the world, but how do we successfully secure them for growth? And obviously the funding piece is incredibly important in that. And currently only 2% of all venture capital funding goes into female-led businesses, despite them owning 38% of the businesses globally. So it's still a very small percentage. So I set out in our conversation this morning talking about all of the positives in the world in relation to females being involved in technology and founding businesses and the types of businesses that they're founding. But obviously the funding element is still a real challenge. And we need to make sure that we can address that going forward in order to make sure that these businesses can be scalable.
Thank you. That was sort of what was percolating in my head was, you know, how does this then translate to scalability if I am building a business off of a personal need? Does that impact sort of the response or the interest from investors who may or may not have that same personal need? So that's, and those numbers are interesting in the sense that we have made such progress and yet there is still this disparity. What do you think on the positive side and seeing all of the beautiful potential, what do you see happening now or what do you see happening in the near future that will help shrink that disparity and help bring more funding into these projects?
Yeah, so I think there's a number of really strong catalysts for change in addressing this issue. So the first one, there's been lots of research done around how venture capitalists view businesses and how they question female founders versus their male counterparts. And the research had looked at comparable businesses, comparable size, and comparable capital needs. And it was from looking and reviewing of all of those businesses, the male-led businesses raised 5 times more funding from the same group of people that were reviewing the pitch deck and reviewing the information in relation to the business. So that's a startling fact. And there is a lot of research that Dana Kanzai has presented, which is very much around if you're being asked the questions by a male VC or a female VC. And they tend to ask different questions to the different founders. So a lot of promotion-based questions are asked of male founders, focused on their achievements and the advances of the business and the great idea. And then the same investors will ask prevention-based questions for the female founders, focused on safety and their responsibility. So it's not they, and those questions in the research that Dana has undertaken actually position the businesses in very, very different ways, even though they're comparable in all of the research that's been undertaken. So being conscious of that unconscious bias, which I think is you know still quite prevalent in venture, at least it's being talked about now, and the research continues to evolve. But we do have a problem in venture, is that like only 8% of venture capitalists are female. There are only 5% of all VC funds have a women executive within their organization, and only 2.7% have a female CEO. So we are really struggling within the venture industry around diversity, equity, and inclusion. So there is an element of where we're aware of the biases, but we also, this is an industry, we've started, as I said at the beginning, to have more engineers and scientists and data analysts and programmers come through that are female, but on the venture side, we're still missing a portion. And we really have to focus on that. There's a number of key initiatives that are happening across the industry, and Diversity VC which is a benchmark program that any venture capital firm can go through that will take you through the diversity inclusion initiatives that need to be applied into your firm to really get that balance. So they look at, you know, your recruitment, they look at your culture, they look at your deal flow, they look at your portfolio guidelines and start to give you structure as to how you can address the imbalance in your teams within venture. So Chuck Warner, who started this initiative and has scaled it significantly, and there are a number of funds that are now focused on addressing this, but also addressing it within their portfolio, which means hopefully more underrepresented founders will eventually, the balance and the sway will happen that we, you know, that we move the dial in terms of the amount of funding that's going there. So if we're addressing the unconscious bias element and we're addressing the executive teams and the teams within venture capital, and we'll start to see how things can improve over time. And I think being conscious of it as an industry is really quite a hot topic. I mean, and there are many amazing VC companies globally that are focused on investing in female founders, but focused on their portfolio of not only female, but underrepresented founders as a whole. So we've got Ada Ventures, and we've got Playfair, and we've got January Ventures that are all making sure that this narrative doesn't fall off the agenda and that we can very significantly try to change it for these businesses that are addressing some of the biggest issues in the world right now. So we need to make sure that we keep focusing on that. And then from a UK perspective, we've got the Investing in Code, which is a government initiative, which allows you to say our portfolio is going to be balanced. And they've got tools and resources and one to make sure that the access to finance is equitable. So I think we've got some stuff moving in the market on the venture side. So I think the change will probably in the venture side will happen quicker than maybe it did in encouraging women into STEM and encouraging women into founding businesses. I think that change will happen quicker because I think there's a definite shift, but it's we've still got some way to go.
A little bit of a side note about the investing in code. So, and I was reading about investing in women and the Rose Review, and from Allison Rose, NatWest's CEO. And first off, I love that there's a woman CEO of one of the major banks. I was curious. When I was reading about it, I was wondering how much of it is really substantive and how much of it is tick boxing, or I guess like how, and I don't know if you have an answer for this, and maybe this whole section gets chopped. As I was reading, I found myself wondering, is this lip service or is this substantial?
Yeah. So I think I'm very grateful to Alison Rose for championing this agenda, not only from her own team's perspective within the bank, and we're seeing definitely a shift from a NatWest perspective, but also putting and shining a spotlight on this, that we need to have equity and equality within finance, whether that's you're taking a bank loan or whether you're moving into taking angel investment, or whether you're in the venture. And I have to admit, I've admired Alison's work for a number of years, and the bank has supported a number of initiatives that you can see at the ground and at the grassroots level in order to change the dial. So I think that if we can continue to have more champions against a lot of the initiatives that are happening and running through, the more people that are talking about it at a and have a seat at the table to really influence it at a government level or at a corporate level, I think is only a good thing. And I think the results from Alison Rose's first report, which were scary, things are moving. And obviously not as fast as we would like, but they are definitely moving. And you can see it in the application at a grassroots level that those changes are happening.
That's great. The something that you were saying about why women are motivated to found businesses also then sort of made me think of something you had said at one point when I asked to just explain the difference between venture capital and angel investment to me, which was so women are founding businesses more from personal need. And one of the things that you had said to me in a previous conversation around angel versus VC was that venture capital tends to be sort of more transactional and maybe balance sheet focused, whereas angel investment was a little bit more, or maybe a lot more, holistic. So I was wondering if you could expand on that kind of difference. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I think talk about the relationship between angel investment and bringing more women founders in as well.
Yeah. So from a venture capital perspective, obviously, venture capital are looking for a return, and they have a timeline to return that money to their limited partners. So every deal that they look at, they are hoping for an outcome that is successful. And they want to return to their investors, and they also want to be able to raise their next fund and go again. And so how they view businesses and how they look at businesses is slightly different than from an angel's perspective. It's probably less risky than some of the early stage and angel investment, but it also can be quite bullish in terms of how quickly they want that company and organization to go. So venture and taking on venture is where your business is really at a stage where it can leverage growing and scaling quickly and with the backing of the venture capital. But ultimately, it's a sales process. They're like a customer and they want to return on that investment as quickly as possible and to be able to return that to their customers and their limited partners within the fund. Angel investment, on the other side, you know, there is a lot of, you're looking at a business as an angel investor and you might like the founder and you might see real potential in them. You will have maybe a deep domain and industry sector knowledge that you feel that you can add value to the company at the early stages. There are elements that, you know, you see that there is a huge market opportunity for this business, and if you can invest early, then you may be in for a win. But angel investment is risky, and they say not to put, you know, a huge amount into angel investment, because, you know, there's still the statistics that so many startup businesses fail. So angel investing is a different journey, because it's a very personal decision as opposed to investing on the behalf of somebody else. You're investing fully from your own perspective, your own viewpoint from that. But there are a number of, you know, types of angel investors that are, you know, talked about all the time in terms of, you know, the business that they can bring, you know, from that perspective. And we look at it in very different ways, you know, and I often encourage startup founders to think about their angel investor in the same way as you would a customer persona. Look at the investor persona that you're trying to target and that you're trying to attract. You know, we're talking about the, you know, the passionate poly persona from an angel investor perspective, which is the person who has the professional experience, understands your industry, can really, really bring a lot to the table from an investment perspective. And then, you know, we've got friendly Frida, who really wants to get their hands on into their business and can come in not only an investment perspective, but also in an advisory role and really being hands on and giving their time really significant. And then, you know, I kind of, some, you know, there's many more of them, but, you know, Connected Charlie, you know, they may not be coming in with an incredible amount of money to invest from an angel investment perspective, but they're connected to investors and they have an impressive network that can support your onwards growth journey from the early stage. There are many more. I kind of call them Professional Penny and Sweating Simon, and, you know, I have personas for all of the angel investors that that I have met along the way. But I think it's really important for the founders to know the type of angel that they're trying to target and really understand, because angel investors, you know, it's risky and they're taking a risk on your business at that very early stage, and they're probably putting in some of the harder money than the venture side. Now, I know many venture capitalists would probably disagree with me on that, but, you know, early stage investment is something that, you know, both from a founding perspective, you need to make sure it's right for you, and the angel needs to make sure that the business they're funding is right for them. And it's a journey. It's a journey.
I'm now thinking about, well, which persona am I? I think that's interesting, and I appreciate the idea that it is a relationship. And so you really, both sides of that coin have to know that they're making the right match. And that feels like something that is different to the way I think we generally think of raising capital or investing, but really thinking about it as a partnership and a relationship, and do we have the right people coming together into the right mix to benefit the outcome of the business. And so I think that I'm curious to, do you think that you talked about the work that is happening within venture capital to you know, kind of dismantle some of the unconscious bias and to diversify the table. And that feels like that's something that is the ball is rolling and it is moving and it will continue to move quickly. Where do you think where do you think angel investing sits within that? And because one of the things I think about is that women are often more risk averse and angel investment is more risky, but also women tend to be looking for things that directly connect to the challenges in their own life or things that they have experienced, which is more aligned with angel investing. So what does diversifying angel investment look like?
Yeah, so there are a number of initiatives happening across the angel ecosystem, as I would describe it. You know, we talk about the venture ecosystem. We definitely have an angel ecosystem too. And I think from a UK perspective, obviously the tax breaks that you can get in early stage investment from an SEIS and EIS perspective is, you know, is advantageous, but it's not happening in every jurisdiction. I think the UK is in a really significant, you know, privileged position. I'm not sure it's going to be here forever from a tax break perspective, but I won't get into politics on an innovation and an adventure conversation. But I do think it's an advantage. But I think we are definitely seeing lots of new angel syndicates emerging. We are definitely seeing lots of new syndicates with a very specific focus to them, particularly around deep tech. The science angels here in the UK are doing amazing work in terms of looking at deep tech. And then an initiative that I have been involved in called Awaken Angels. And I suppose from my accent, I am Irish, based in London. This is an initiative that we have been working on for a number of months called Awaken Angels, and we will be launching officially at the end of May. And you are right. This is a shift that we have felt has been needed within the angel ecosystem for some time, because if you have never invested in an early stage business before, if you don't understand the investment process, if you don't understand how to assess a business from an early stage, you'll probably stay away from angel investment. And one of the things that we're trying to do at Awaken Angels is actually, like we've done in terms of supporting the pipeline for female founders, we're trying to support the pipeline for angel and early stage investors. So we have built a proposition that allows us to take novice angels, those that have never invested before, and take them on a learning journey so that they understand due diligence and company valuation and deal terms and follow-on rounds and exiting investments and can really look and assess the business from a business model and financial perspective. So it's giving an early stage angel investor who's never invested before the confidence and the skills that they can cast their vote successfully into the deal, and that they can be feeling very comfortable that they are making it from a secure and knowledgeable position. And we all know women like to know the details of elements. So the education component is really important to Awaken Angels. But the other element is that we felt very strongly that we needed to make angels angel investing for the many, not the few, and that we would allow our early stage investors to come in with a minimum ticket of 2K. So that was really to democratize the process and to enable those that have never invested before to maybe step up and take a step forward, but feeling less of a risk when the number, and we know 2K is still a significant number for many, but it's not the 10 or 15 that sometimes is requested from a lot of angels and a lot of syndicates. So Awaken Angels has been evolving over time. We are on the island of Ireland. We are investing in female founders on the island of Ireland, but we're very keen to make sure that this is an initiative that hopefully other people will adopt and take forward in terms of making sure that if we're successfully developing the founders, that we have the flow of angel investment coming in behind them, so that when they get to the venture stage, that they have significant support from these personas that we talk about, and that they have not only the early stage investment, but the domain expertise, the connectivity, and the networks opened up to them through a community of investors, and in doing that, we hope that Awaken Angels will shift the landscape for the early stage investment in Ireland. But there are Hermesa here in the UK do a similar. The UK British Angels Association have female-led syndicates too. There are a lot of initiatives, happening globally, and we're just championing the one from the island of Ireland.
I'm so excited that. That our timing aligned to be able to talk about this just as it's getting ready to launch, because I think this is really fantastic. Something that struck me as you were describing it is how it is Awaken Angels is both laser focused and holistic, in the sense that you're focused specifically on female founders on the island of Ireland. Mm-hmm. And you are looking at how to benefit everyone involved in that ecosystem, and really create a community and learning experience for everyone. That feels like just the perfect balance there. Yeah. Could you talk a little bit more about the learning component for investors? Because that, I think, is really interesting to me and to a lot of my friends and peers. And what does that look like?
Yeah, so we're women led, not women only. We will let Irish men and our Irish diaspora also come and join in terms of investing in female founders, but or female led businesses or women led businesses. But we will, the deal will always have a majority of female investment in the deal. So the learning component was really hugely important as we started to build out what Awaken Angels and the mechanics of Awaken Angels will look like. Because obviously, novice investors, those that have never invested before, they want to learn about best practice, about early stage investing. There's a lot of people in transition looking for new challenges and opportunities, and may want to start their angel investing journey too. So the program is an online course, which will be delivered live and in person, and then the modules will be available for you for a 12-month period after you've taken the program, in case you want to go back as you're looking at the investments. Obviously, all of the materials will be available in our learning portal, but it's very much looking at, how you would look at an investment strategy for yourself as an early stage investor, and understanding, what that looks like from a personal perspective, when to build, how to use that investment strategy, and how to improve it as you evolve in your learning. We will take you through a whole element around due diligence, getting familiar with the basic components around that. What is due diligence? How is it implemented? What are the, assessments of the business that need to be done that are, aligned to the opportunity and what should be reviewed? We'll take you through company valuation, and how to get familiar with what is the valuation of the business, the valuation process, the valuation negotiations that sometimes angel syndicates will need to take on with the founder, and you know, very much how do we position the value and to the community of investors. And then obviously talking about deal terms, you know, the legal documents, clauses for equity, convertible loans, all the things that come around deal terms, and then supporting you to understand how to manage your investment and how to manage and build your portfolio, that it's giving you a broad enough spread, and giving you areas and sectors that are exciting to you. So the community will work on a, we will bring and invite our women-led businesses to pitch to the community, and then each investor that wants to move forward will cast their vote as to whether they would like to be involved. Then we will work through the due diligence process ourselves, and then we will come back and make recommendations to the community, and then hopefully we will be able to move forward with the investment.
That's amazing. And I really appreciate that this is across the entire island of Ireland. And I'm wondering how many companies are involved so far, and how many investors are involved so far?
Yeah, so we've been really fortunate because this is kind of stage two of what the team have been working on, and you know, we've been very much focused on this element and component of our community for the last kind of 6 months. So Awaken Hub, which is our community for our female founders, that we and all of the women-led businesses that we have. So the community in our online community is just close to 400, and then in the wider ecosystem around those businesses is about 3,000. So we've got lots of activity and lots of support for early stage founders going on their journey. And we've run two accelerator programs, which has allowed us to put 86 companies through in total, and those companies are now at the stage where they are scaling their businesses and ready to take on some early stage investment. So we obviously will bring some of those to our Awaken Angels community, but our deal flow will come from the wider ecosystem across the island of Ireland, not just those that are involved in our community, but we will open it up to all female founders from an investment perspective.
Wow, this is really amazing. And I'm really, I feel like I've overused the word amazing on this conversation, but I need to invest in a thesaurus. The potential here just feels really amazing. I think that there's, I did it again. but I think the space for really creating change is wonderful, because as more people learn how to approach investing, then that really makes it possible to then change the landscape long term. And
they're
so
also working alongside experienced angels, you know, those that have built a portfolio and those that continue to invest. So we want to make sure that they get a balance of I would say, you know, textbook learning or online learning from that perspective. All of the learning will be have real life experience woven through it also. Mm-hmm. But you're also seeing experienced angels ask questions on the pitch call. You're seeing them lead out on due diligence. You're getting their experience and expertise to support you taking that first leap and going on your on building your own portfolio.
And has that you mentioned the community and the online, the hub, and is that something that you foresee being sort of a umbrella element of this, I guess is how I would frame it, where people are actively involved with Awaken Angels or have previously been and are now investing in other ways, is that going to continue to be sort of a network of for knowledge sharing kind of thing?
Absolutely, absolutely. And we will have a community for our angels too, to be able to do exactly what we've done on the founder's side, to do it for angels. So angels will be able to ask questions, and it'll be a safe place, and there'll be you know, as we've always said from our Awakened Hub perspective, there is no stupid question, and you're going on a journey, right? And our, you know, we've had a number of angels and a number of angels register with us to get involved across our diaspora. So we have a strong Irish, as the Irish have a strong diaspora. So we have a number of those that have already said they're keen to invest back in to businesses on the island of Ireland. So, you know, our community is, you know, where we are focused now. That's not to say that it wouldn't take an international growth trajectory in time, but I think we need to solve the problem that is closest to home for us all now first. Mm-hmm. And then let's see where we go to.
Wow, that's there was a part of my brain that was thinking about how this could be something really transformative in a lot of places, but like you said, focusing where the challenge impacts you directly makes sense to start in Ireland. And something that I think about a lot is this sort of, you know, just because something works here doesn't necessarily mean that the only way to be successful is to expand elsewhere. So while my brain immediately goes to where else could this be transformational, there's also a part of me that says, but wait a minute, there's maybe success really just looks like really significant transformation in one place. So
we would like to take over the world, but we'll do it on one island at a time. One island at a time.
Okay, good. Okay. I love that. So I think that I'd like to go ahead and ask you my final question that I ask for everyone on the podcast. And that is, who or what organization or company is doing something innovative that has you really excited? And it could be from any realm of the world.
So I'm going to give you one. It is an Irish-based business, but it is male-founded. So please don't shoot me when I've championed women through the course of this conversation. And it is an amazing business called Cubby. And for me, I have chosen Cubby because I think it can make a real difference. I am very passionate about diversity and inclusion. And inclusion, this proposition really does have the ability to influence. So Cubby is a personalized sensory experience that is currently being deployed into schools, both in Ireland and the UK, but has the potential to be deployed in bus stations and train stations and airports. And it's to support autistic children so that they can take time out into their cubby in an immersive, safe space of sound and vision that allows them to self-regulate. And I think as we're looking to make sure that the world is comfortable for everybody, I think Cubby has a real part to play in that. And students who use Cubby in their school setting are no longer tagged or called disruptors. They are just allowed to leave the classroom, go to the cubby, self-regulate, and come back into the classroom and continue their lessons, so that we're not making children feel different at the early stages of their education and their development. And I think they are removing the word disruption and changing it to inclusion. And Cubby is a business that I'm incredibly passionate about. And I think, you know, as I say, it's starting in schools, but it could be located anywhere. Where a person, a adult, a child needs to just take some time out and allow themselves that sensory regulation to balance things out and move forward with their day.
That is really interesting. And I like that you pointed out that while it is focused on children, it could potentially continue, because the coping skills that we develop when we're kids are then the coping skills that we use for the rest of our lives. But for some reason are sort of accepted as kids. And then when we're adults, we're supposed to snap back to not needing any of those, which I find counterintuitive. So is this something where a child could go into the cubby at their school and have their personalized experience? And then exactly, if they were in a bus station could go in and have the same experience regardless of the physical cubby itself?
Exactly. So at the moment, they are in just in schools, but they could be deployed, as I say, to be connected, you know, all over the world, regardless of whether you're in a school environment or an airport. But what your sensory regulation, you know, it's very personalized, and it is supported through your medical team that are supporting you. But you just type in your code, and you could type your code anywhere in the world, and you'll get the same personalized experience for you. And currently the child can leave the room, instruct the cubby themselves if they're at an age to do so, or if they need to be supported by a teacher. But if they are at an age to do so, they can put in their own details and information, and then they just step into the cubby and self-regulate.
Wow. That feels like such a pivotal moment in education and inclusion, and really, really powerful. Thank you for sharing that. I really like that.
I could share many more, and I probably will get killed for not sharing a female founder. But I do. Cubby is one that I feel quite passionately about. And you know, if we're going to, you know, we've started so hard to change the dial from an education perspective, that we just need to keep focusing on the elements that will always improve children's experience in that space, because they need to grow up and be amazing founders change the world themselves.
Yeah. Well, in a at the end of May, then people can go to the Awaken Angels website and see lots of women founders that you also recommend. So you are off the hook on that, because you are obviously supporting lots and lots of women founders. Oh, thank you so much, Denise. I just really enjoy talking to you, and you. Every time I do, I learn something new and interesting, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me today. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Rachel, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Wow. Well, thanks for joining me for this conversation. I hope you found it as exciting as I did. Special thanks to Denise McQuaid, my guest today. Be sure to check out the show notes for more information and links. And thank you to you for listening. Please be sure to rate, review, subscribe, and maybe one day I'll be the next Sarah Koenig. A quick note to say that I'll be taking a break for the month of June, but I can't wait for you to hear who I have lined up for July. And if you know someone who would be a great guest, please email me at rachel@sixdegreesstrategy.co or send me a message on LinkedIn. The podcast theme music is Strangers in the Night by Vocalista, downloaded from Upbeat.io.